Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Michael Krasny, author of Let There Be Laughter. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mavena on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. How do we go about changing our world, and how long should it take? In this season, just before the Jewish New Year of Rosh Hashanah, when we look at our own lives and seek to change them for the better, we also need to look at our society and think about how we might bring about positive change there. The Torah gives us powerful commandments, mitzvot, about how we are to live in society. We are commanded to be moral, to protect the rights of the impoverished, the widow, immigrant, the stranger. We are to be honest in business, careful of the needs of the hungry and the homeless. We are to seek to create a society of ethical practice and moral concern. We are to understand that a nation is judged by how it treats its weakest, neediest members. We are told repeatedly God knows and expects us to live to this covenant, uphold it, cherish it, make it our own. And we are told of the blessings that will be ours if we do this, and the curses we will bring on ourselves if we can't. This covenant, established in Deuteronomy in our Torah, but really throughout Judaism, this covenant was large and challenging. It put real responsibility on its members to do things that weren't easy or obvious, because they were right. No doubt our ancient Israelite ancestors sometimes struggled when they were told in the Torah to open your hands to the poor and needy, to welcome the stranger, to love your neighbor as you love yourself, as Leviticus puts it. Probably they didn't always manage to give full tithes or make pilgrimage to the temple to declare gratitude for what they had. I'll bet that our ancestors in the time of the Bible found that there were many times when they didn't provide adequately for the widow or the orphan or the stranger in their midst. But that challenge, the daily requirement to live to this standard, nonetheless made us better people, made Jewish society egalitarian and generally ethical. When our ancestors failed, they learned that what God wanted was not punishment but tshuvah, return to the right course. That's true for us, too. Positive societal change in the days when Judaism was established was not instantaneous, but evolutionary. It took time to take full effect, longer still to institutionalize. But change for the better took place for our ancestors and was codified as a practical framework later by the rabbis of the Talmud. And that is at the very heart of what Judaism has to teach the world. During these last days of the month of Elul, we are in the home stretch of an election campaign for president of our country and many other offices. On a personal level, each of us must seek to improve our own lives, to become more generous and more grateful, to love those around us and find our own tshuva. But we also have a larger responsibility to seek to improve society. Jews have lived well in an America that has shown the ability to evolve and change for the better. Today, at least officially, the rights of women, gays, lesbians, and many others are now officially accepted as fact. We have gone from a society in which many, if not most, blacks were prevented from even voting for president to a country in which our president is an African American. We have gone from Jim Crow laws and open discrimination against Jews, Hispanics, Asians, homosexuals, and many others, to a society in which gays and lesbians can now publicly marry, in which the Supreme Court and the Congress of our nation actually looks a lot like America. We have made progress. Yet we know, as Americans, as Jews and Americans, that we still have a long way to go. The conflicts involving the rights and safety of African Americans have moved from large-scale demonstrations and riots to the symbolic realm of national anthems before sporting events, but the problem remains. Unarmed black men continue to be shot and killed by police all over America at an alarming rate. The Orlando nightclub massacre reminds us that LGBTQ groups remain the target of unlawful attack. Immigrants seeking freedom and opportunity in America remain an easy target for unreasoning and opportunistic hostility. As we move into the Jewish season of return, repentance, and holiness, the days of awe, we individually have to remember and act to try to rectify the failures of our own society. We have a primary Jewish responsibility to repair that which is broken, to heal that which is injured. If we do that, well, then the coming year, which starts a week from tonight, will truly be a year of goodness and blessing. To play us in this morning on the themes of the High Holy Days, here's the Beth Abraham Youth Chorale, conducted by Cantor Jerome Kopmar, Shomer Yisrael, from the liturgy for the period of Slichot prayers we sang last night, and in preparation for the Jewish High Holy Days to come. That was the Beth Abraham Youth Chorale's Shomer Yisrael, Guardian of Israel, guard the people that affirms that God is one. Rosh Hashanah starts a week from tonight. Stop by a temple, particularly my own Temple Emmanuel, and arrange to be there. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Michael Krasny, has a new book on Jewish humor explaining, well, both where it comes from and why it's funny. Find out when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
It's everything you wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's Taste of Judaism program is now in its 17th year and explores Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community. This free introductory class taught by our rabbis is immensely popular throughout southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too.
In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, Taste of Judaism brings to life Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. It'll help you rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all and include Jewish snacks. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year at Splendido as well. The whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class, starting soon. It's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email Mila, M-I-L-A, at tetucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Michael Krasny is the author of Let There Be Laughter, A Treasury of Great Jewish Humor and What It All Means. He's a PhD scholar, professor of English and American Literature, and host of his own radio show, Forum with Michael Krasny, an award-winning broadcast journalist and lots of other stuff. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
So the idea of writing a book about Jewish humor, that's never happened before, of course.
Well, you know, there's a lot of joke books out there, but in terms of the sort of, I don't know, I call it analytic work that I try to do, I'm not sure that there is much out there. Freud wrote a book about 100 years ago called Jokes and the Unconscious, and he was a person who really loved Jewish jokes, but he was trying to show what they meant, and I sort of took the same tact in this book. I wanted to find out, what do they mean? What does it all mean? What is Jewish humor? What's behind it? Heritage, identity, history. And there's a lot there. It's a big canvas.
You know, I have to ask you to tell me, this is a difficult question, but what's your favorite Jewish joke?
It is a very tough question, Rabbi. It's like asking someone what their favorite child is, almost. But they fall into categories, and I try to do this book thematically, being a longtime teacher of literature, and look at, in fact, each chapter of the book is kind of led by a favorite, what I would call one of my favorite jokes. If you're looking for sort of a favorite joke of all time, Malcolm Gladwell believes the first thing that springs to your mind is maybe the best indication. I'm going to have to go with two here, and they're both in the early chapter about Jewish mothers and grandmothers. And the one that comes immediately to mind is a joke probably many of your listeners know, different versions of it, but it's about the grandmother who takes her grandchild to the seashore, and he's playing by himself, and a big tide takes him, and it pulls him into the undertow, and she's screaming, howling, praying, really, for some assistance because she can't swim. And almost miraculously, out of nowhere comes this young lifeguard, quite handsome and muscular, that dives in, brings the grandson out, takes him to shore, and proceeds to give him artificial respiration. And the kid is blue, and she's praying, and she's howling, and she's, this is my nachas, what's going to happen to him? Finally, the lifeguard says, it's okay, it's okay. He's going to be okay. He's going to live. Whereupon she says, he had a hat.
I love that joke. It truly classic, because it captures something that's so uniquely Jewish. I wonder if that's a joke you find in other cultures.
I don't think so. I think that's exactly the point I was trying to make when you asked me what's my favorite. It's a very difficult decision to make, but there's something about that joke, just as you say, subtextually and psychologically and in terms of its imprint, that is just particularly Jewish. There's another one like that that I love. It is also in that first chapter. There are two versions of it, but basically it involves a dutiful, loving Jewish daughter who is at her father's bedside. And the curtain is about to close, and he's about really to check out. He's dying of sadly, of an interminable disease, and he's got moments left probably. And he smells kugel, and he says to his daughter, kugel, I smell kugel, just a taste of kugel before I die. And she says, of course, Daddy. And she jumps up and races into the kitchen. And she's gone. He's barely holding on. He wants to taste the kugel. Finally, she comes back. She sits down, and he's hanging by a gossamer thread. She folds her hands, and he says, where's the kugel? He can barely even eke out the words. And she says, Mom says it's for after.
I love that joke. And being Jewish, I have to tell you, the punchline I like even better is, Bubby says it's for the Shiva. but you need a more Jewish audience for that.
Yeah, exactly. And this was a challenge for me writing this book, because I realized I was writing for a large audience. In fact, I say in the book, the other version is it's for the Shiva. They didn't even bring the Bubby in there.
Right, right. We will continue, because listen, we can not only trade jokes but analyses when we come back in just a moment with Michael Krasny, author of Let There Be Laughter, in just a moment here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends from Freedom of Smoke, David and Pamela. You guys focus so much on your customers. Tell us why they're so important to you.
Our customers are extremely important to us. It's why we built this company. Our job is to get people to quit smoking, and we're extremely good at it. You can come in a very nice, comfortable lounge environment, try anything you want to try. You'll have knowledgeable and helpful staff that will be happy to get you or your family and loved ones to quit smoking.
We have 4 locations in Tucson, 1 in Catalina on the Pinal border, and our latest store has just opened in Sierra Vista.
And these are all lounges, sort of a comfortable environment for people to come in.
Yes, they're set up with couches and pool tables, pinball machines, video games, anything to help you along with your time.
What's the best way for people to find out more information?
They can go onto our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call our toll-free hotline for any information that you want, 1-800-705-7013.
And that number again is?
1-800-705-7013.
Thanks so much. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2jewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, 2jewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website, or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as popular Jewish podcasts in the top 10 in America, Moment Magazine says. We now have about a month and a half or so until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. Continuing a national trend that has seen 95% of Jewish donations in this presidential election go to Hillary Clinton, arch Republican donor Sheldon Adelson will contribute $5 million towards electing Donald Trump. But that is a tiny fraction of the pledged $100 million that was reported earlier this year. The billionaire casino magnate and backer of pro-Israel and Republican causes said that he and his wife earmarked $45 million for this election cycle for GOP candidates, $20 million for U.S. Senate and House of Representative races each, and $5 million for Trump. In May, Adelson bucked a substantial number of Republican Jews who opposed Trump, even though by that time it was clear he would be the party's presidential nominee for the GOP. Adelson endorsed the pugnacious real estate magnate and reality TV star and appealed to other top Republican Jewish donors to follow him. Reports then said that he was prepared to spend up to $100 million to elect Donald Trump. It's not known if Adelson plans to give more than the $5 million ahead of the November 8th election. Trump and Adelson have met several times since then. They posed for a photo at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland in July. But Adelson appears to have become uneasy with Trump. After a meeting last month, he urged him to show greater humility. Good luck with that. And now, Trump will get $5 million from Sheldon Adelson, but not the $100 million Adelson originally pledged. In the last election cycle, Mitt Romney received about 29% of Jewish donations. Trump is attracting only 5%. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about Saudi Arabia and the Palestinians and the part of this whole month in which we focused on kind of after effects of 9/11. You mentioned that there's been a change. The Saudis have undermined any real possibility for a Palestinian state for many years, no matter how positive looking the peace process might have seemed at the time, out of fear that the Palestinian state would be democratic and chaotic, and the Saudis, as a monarchy, really a feudal monarchy, certainly value order above all. That's begun to change.
Right. And I think the beginnings of the change that you described last week really coincided with the beginnings of the Arab Spring and the emergence of democracy or democratizing forces or destabilizing forces in many different locations in the Arab world. And that scared the bejesus out of the Saudis.
And you wouldn't think they'd have a bejesus in them as Muslims, right, but there you go.
Right. So I think that part of what's happening is not only a response to groups like the Islamic State and others, but the whole process of non-state entities and chaotic, unpredictable groups of people wreaking havoc and terror throughout the Islamic world is making, if not an active alliance, at least a sort of rapprochement with Israel more appealing. A state that acts in predictable ways and abides by international law at least 99% of the time may be seen as preferable by the Saudi royal family to the chaos that's going on in Syria and Yemen, where they've intervened militarily, and Iraq, obviously, and Afghanistan, and many other places.
And Gaza, for that matter.
Right. Not to mention Libya, Tunisia. I mean,
Egypt for a while.
The growth of the Islamic State and other terrorist groups has clearly frightened the Saudis and made them re-examine some of their assumptions about what works and what doesn't work, what will enable them to survive and what endangers their survival. And as much as they may have sponsored some of this activity in the past, I think Saudi money and sponsorship is drying up for some of these groups, and they are clearly finding other sources. But the Saudis are looking, like every other state, for their own survival. And sometimes the enemy of my enemy is my friend, in politics as in personal life. And I think that's a large part of what's going on right now.
Tom, thanks very much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We are delighted to welcome our Mivi non-Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Refugees have been an incredibly important part of the international news scene for well over the past year, probably should have been for years before that. Israel is a country of refugees and now has a number of political refugees, some of whom it knows what to do with, some of whom maybe it doesn't. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so it's a kind of old issue, but one of the issues, painful issues that we're dealing with now in Israel. And recently, I don't know if I told you yet, but recently, like last week, it was September 1st, school year start in Israel. And again, around one of the schools that, you know, the Tel Aviv, Ron Huldai, the mayor of Tel Aviv, wanted to dedicate to this.
And a past guest of Two Jewish, by the way, Ron Huldai.
So him and Bennett wanted to close one school in this neighborhood in Tel Aviv that I will talk about it soon, and to actually dedicate it to the kids of refugees. And around this all this issue came again to the kotarot, to the headlines of the, you know, newspaper in Israel.
Right.
So and again in Tel Aviv, most of the, there is a new bus station. It's not new. It's like very old. It's 25 years, but it's called new bus station, and it's kind of the center for all the refugees that find it as a very central place. Because
it's also where you used to get the best falafel in Tel Aviv. I don't know if that's still true, but
yeah, the old station was the best.
Maybe
place
it was the old station. Yeah. The new station is 25 years old. But anyway, go ahead. So they've now dedicated this area because it's so central for refugees.
Yeah. So the problem that becomes, like, you know, these refugees from Eritrea, Sudan, and other countries in Africa, they're, you know, their journey is horrible, and they're entering Israel through Egypt.
Right, and then across the Sinai.
Yeah,
and into
from
Israel.
Egypt to Eilat, and then, right. And their stories and memories that they're bringing from this journey is really horrible. And I can understand Israel is an Israel government and policy at the beginning to be tolerant. It's very it goes well with our Jewish values, you know, to help those who really need. And we remember when gates were closed
to us
right. You know, not so many years ago. But then it became a problem because the numbers grew and grew and grew, instead of hakarat hatov, instead of being gratitude and treat, you know, their neighbors and those who live in you know, this place in Tel Aviv, the crime, just the crime, like the percentage of crime, like just
the crime,
increased. The
crime rate increased.
Yeah, and the people, the native Israeli who lived in this neighborhood, who now call themselves Otef Tachana, comparing themselves to Otef Gaza, which is the Gaza envelope, to show, you know, for Israeli to hear Otef Tachana, it's like, ooh, Otef Gaza. It's like really using one of the narratives, like it's almost like using Shoah to compare something.
Yeah, you know. It's like calling it the, I don't know, bus strip or something, like the Gaza strip.
It's Gaza
almost.
Envelope,
yeah.
or the, yeah. all the settlements who
right.
kind of Otfim, embracing
yeah,
Gaza.
Encircled Gaza.
Yeah,
right.
geographically embracing. Anyway, so they established a new NGO called, you know, Otef Tachana, in order to fight for the rights to live, you know, the tzivyon, like to stay as an Israeli neighborhood and to fight for, first of all, for their rights before they are fighting for, before the Israeli government or Tel Aviv authority or anyone else fighting for these kids and refugees' rights, which, you know,
boy, it's a complicated
it's a, exactly,
question.
Exactly, like yeah. everything in Israel. But anyway, so...
like everything in Israel.
So Netanyahu and Bennett just started the school year, but already with some issues. One of them was to close this school that was opened in the early 90s by Olim from former Soviet Union.
Immigrants from the former Soviet Union.
That
and now
wanted to establish their own school.
For refugees so that you can bring them into the yeah. Israeli mainstream ultimately, or that's the
so
idea.
So this NGO earned another success by not closing the
fascinating. Israelis forming an NGO to fight for their neighborhood against refugees who are being brought in by the government. You know, democracies are really complicated, aren't they?
Yes.
Thanks, Ashrat. We'll talk next week. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, headmaster of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Boker Tov.
Boker Or. We are in the period of Elul, this last month of the Jewish year in which we do tshuva, return,
yeah.
repentance, repair.
Yeah.
Grown-ups are used to hearing about the 10 days of repentance.
Right.
But it's really different at different ages, the whole concept of return and repentance.
Mm-hmm.
How do we teach that to a first grader, a third grader, a fifth
sure.
grader? What's
sure.
the difference?
Well, and a lot of these concepts are very abstract. And, you know, repenting and digging deep and thinking about who we are, soul searching, wanting better for ourselves, really critical values, you know, teaching kids about fasting, it's not real fun, but it's an important part of the rituals that we do together as a people. So it's all about those developmentally appropriate practices.
So developmentally appropriate practices, Judaism has some of that built in.
Yeah.
You mentioned fasting. You don't have to fast until you're 13. Kids
right.
sometimes start with half a day when they're 11 or 12.
Right.
That's a real basic.
Or refrain from that dessert today, or, you know, just
do something.
Deprive yourself a little.
Yeah, just a bit. How do we teach that concept of apology or repentance? To
yeah.
how do we build up to that?
It's idea? About steps and increments, right? It's building up. And, you know, most human beings, as they grow up, have a sense of empathy and have an understanding of right and wrong, need forgiveness when they make mistakes and crave it. And so even in very, very young children, when something goes wrong, when somebody's feelings are hurt, when there are tears, or when somebody feels like they have been wronged, those are great opportunities to help enforce the value of forgiveness and of looking at ways that if we made that mistake, how can we do that differently? How can we do things good at home to make the home peaceful and happy? How can we get along with our brother or our sister? What are the little chores or mitzvot or things that we can do to contribute positively? So there are many things for young people as they're growing to do that are really tangible as they take on more responsibility and ownership of their world. And it's thinking through that lens, you know, okay, my six-year-old just did this. What's the opportunity to help them learn a bit of remorse or to help them understand that that wasn't okay? Here's a better way to handle that issue.
You know, and of course, it doesn't stop when a kid turns 13.
Mm-hmm. Lifelong.
Teenagers are different. College-age kids are different. They all respond kind of differently. Do adults still need to learn more about repentance?
You know, I don't think that any human being is ever done learning. If we're paying enough attention, right? And I think there's capacity in everybody to learn a little bit more of what that means for us as individuals. You know, it's more than hitting your chest in synagogue and maybe giving tzedakah. It's deeper than that. And so that's one of the beauties of the cycle of the calendar, right? So here's another opportunity to dig deeper and to think through this again and come out as a better human being and a stronger Jew.
But we can think about these coming holidays as the ideal learning time.
Mm-hmm.
We will talk next week. Thanks, John.
Looking forward.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get the old Jewish joke of the week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Max Greenberg was at his favorite deli when he called over the waiter. "Yes," asked the waiter. "Are you sure you're the waiter I ordered from?" asked Max. I'm sure, says the waiter. "Why do you ask?" Are you really sure?" says Max. "I'm sure. Why?" And Max answers, "Because I was expecting a much older man by now." That was the truly old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well, and may your waiter come soon with the food. And now a word of Torah. This week, we celebrate the penultimate Shabbat of the year, the next-to-last one, which means that our Torah portion is one of the great sections, Nitzavim. You stand here today, all of you, from the oldest to the youngest, the wealthiest to the poorest, the most famous to the humblest, the leaders of your community and the strangers visiting with you. You are all part of the covenant with the Lord your God, you and every other generation to come who will be descended from you. You are all engaged in this great brit, the covenant that affirms you will be God's people and God will be your Lord. This universal covenant establishes that we are part of a profound and eternal tradition, a connection to our ancestors that will be carried forward to our descendants. Each of us, all of us, are part of this remarkable compact. It is an extraordinarily democratic and egalitarian agreement with God, a brit shared with everyone, regardless of gender or age. Children and women stand with men, not always the case at the time of the Torah or even today. So what is the content of the commandment, the mitzvah, that we are now to observe? At the climax of our Torah portion, we are told, Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo niflet himimcha. Look, this commandment I command you today is not too awesome for you. It's not beyond your reach. It's not in the heavens that you should say, who among us can go up to the heavens and take it for us and teach it to us so that we can do it? It's not across the sea that you have to say, who among us can cross the sea and bring it back to us that we may do it? No, it's very close to you, already in your mouth and in your heart to do it. Perhaps the mitzvah, the commandment Nitzavim speaks about, is no more than becoming aware of the presence of Torah in our very midst, or more precisely, of the presence of God here and now. In this season, we prepare tshuva, our repentance. But if God is here now, tshuva is just a way of becoming aware that Torah is already in our minds. God is already in our hearts. Tshuva simply means God says, return to me and again become aware of me always being in your life. It's a great thing to remember as we approach Rosh Hashanah and the season of tshuva. Rosh Hashanah starts next Sunday night. Be our guest. Join us at Temple Emmanuel for services, 7:30 p.m. Sunday evening, 10 a.m. Monday morning, Tashlich at Reed Park Rose Garden, Monday afternoon at 5, and lots of younger children and family Rosh Hashanah experiences. Call 520-327-4501 for no charge admission cards. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning, Michael Krasny, author of the new book, Let There Be Laughter, A Treasury of Jewish Humor and All It Means, will explain what it is about Jewish humor that makes it unique. Find out when we return right here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In his swan song speech to the UN, President Barack Obama again urged Palestinians to end incitement and Israel to end settlement. Surely Israelis and Palestinians will be better off if Palestinians reject incitement and recognize the legitimacy of Israel, but Israel recognizes that it cannot occupy and permanently settle Palestinian land, Obama said last week addressing the United Nations General Assembly in New York. That was the sole mention of the Middle East conflict in a speech that otherwise focused on the need to tamp down hatred among all peoples, faiths, and nations. Israel has been concerned that Obama, in his final months in office, will launch a final bid for a Palestinian-Israeli peace. But the lack of emphasis on the issue in his final speech to the United Nations suggests not so much. A letter signed by 43 rabbis in Texas called on Texas Governor Greg Abbott to remain in the U.S. Refugee Resettlement Program. At this moment, with the number of refugees and displaced persons at its highest in recorded history, it is more important than ever for Texas to protect and welcome refugees, read the letter sent last week, hours after Abbott announced he was withdrawing Texas from the program over concerns about the lack of effective security screening of the refugees. That withdrawal will be effective January 31, 2017. Texas has welcomed more refugees in recent years than any other state, including the most of any state, between October of last year and March of this year. The rabbi's letter was spearheaded by HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the global Jewish nonprofit that protects refugees. HIAS was founded in 1881, originally to help Jewish immigrants fleeing pogroms in Russia and Eastern Europe. Since its founding, the U.S. has offered refuge and protection to the world's most vulnerable. Time and again, these refugees were Jews. Whether they were welcomed to Texas by the Galveston movement after fleeing Tsarist Russia, whether they came later following the horrors of the Holocaust, or the persecution in Soviet Russia or Iran, our relatives and friends found safety in this country and in the great state of Texas, read the Texas rabbi's letter. Refugees in Texas are taxpayers, consumers, business owners, and leaders in a broad range of industries across state. It's imperative that refugees in Texas continue to be fully welcome and supported in their new homes, that they receive the critical health and social services promised to them, the rabbi's letter said. Texas decided to pull out of the program out of concern for the federal vetting process for refugees. It remains to be seen whether the rabbi's protest and Hias's work will prevent this damaging withdrawal at a time of a great international refugee crisis. And at the Emmy Awards, winning actor Jeffrey Tambor from the show Transparent went on a long, long speech. So the band started, and he said this.
Sheket bevakasha.
Not that there is ever a shortage of Jews or Jewish moments in a Hollywood awards show, but that might be the first time someone actually said Sheket bevakasha during one. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Dr. Michael Krasny is the author of Let There Be Laughter, A Treasure of Great Jewish Humor and What It All Means. So did your mother want you to be a doctor, but you became a PhD?
My dad was the one who really wanted me to be a doctor, I think, because he was a frustrated MD and never made it to medical school. There were quotas back in the day, as I keep telling my students. My mother, I think, would have been happy just if I became successful in a mensch. And I do tell a story, though, in my book. There's a lot in there about Jewish doctors, about my wife's uncle, who, when I was finishing my PhD, said, why don't you be a real doctor? Because that was his in the sense of making a better living than being a PhD. You were asking me, though, about favorite jokes, and I have to include the classic, which many Jews know, which, again, is very distinctly Jewish, about this arduous hike up a mountain that a number of people of different backgrounds take, and the Mexican gets to the top, and he says, I'm tired and I'm thirsty. I must have tequila. And the Russian says, I'm tired and I'm thirsty. I must have vodka. And the Italian says, I'm tired and I'm thirsty, I must have wine. And the Jew says, I'm tired and I'm thirsty, I must have diabetes. Just something in that joke, again, that's elemental, that's really rudimentary Jewish.
Yeah, you know, there's a joke in here that I didn't know. This is a high compliment. Maybe two or three. You know, we use a different Jewish joke of the week every week. The show has been on the air for 14 years. You know, sooner or later, you've gone through most of them. But it's the one about the Jewish guy who goes to see the rabbi, and he tells the rabbi his father died and left him $1 million 3 weeks ago, and then 2 weeks ago his uncle died and left him $1 million, and then his first cousin died and left him $1 million. And the rabbi says, oh, these losses must be very difficult, but still, look at all the wealth you have. You can do so much good. And the guy says, yeah, but rabbi, you don't understand. This week, nothing.
You tell a good joke, Rabbi, and I'm sorry there weren't more in there, but this is, of course, the difficulty with the Internet now, that they're spread out wide. I can tell you a couple of jokes that I never heard, and I really thought that there might not ever be another Jewish joke that I hadn't heard. But in the research, and even after the book was published, there were a couple. You want me to try them out on you? And see,
yeah,
you
sure.
Know?
Let's see. That'd be great.
All right. I offered $100 for anybody who could do this. I won't keep this offer presently because the book's been published. But I said, anybody can tell me a Jewish joke I haven't heard, there'd be $100 for you, friends, relatives, acquaintances. And a joke came to me about by someone who's more of an acquaintance. I had to pay the $100 because I hadn't heard of it. So the joke goes like this. The rabbi's in shul, and he notices a man who is has a terribly sad countenance, and he wonders, what's the problem? And he's got this man in his mind. He's a very compassionate rabbi. The service is over. He goes up to him, and he says, you know, I couldn't help but notice you look very sad. And he says, you're right, Rabbi. I am sad. And he tells him, well, tell me. I'm a rabbi. You can be open with me about this. Maybe I can help you. Well, the truth of the matter is, I keep meeting women, and I fall in love, and I bring them home, and my mother doesn't like them. There hasn't been one that my mother has liked. And this has happened repeatedly, over and over again. And the rabbi said, I have an idea for you. Why don't you, can go on the Internet and get all kinds of information. Now, why don't you find someone who has interests in common with your mother or other things in common with her and bring her home? Rabbi, that's something I haven't tried. Thank you so much. You've given me a good idea. 3 weeks pass. Rabbi sees the man. He looks lugubrious. He looks sadder than he did 3 weeks before. And as soon as the service is over, he runs off the bima, goes up to the man and says, tell me, you look even sadder than before. You look disconsolate. What's the matter? He says, I took your advice. I found a woman who had common interests with my mother. Not only that, but she talked like my mother. She cooked like my mother. She looked like my mother. So my father hated her.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Yeah. I have heard that joke, but it's a great joke.
And the other one that I hadn't heard came after the book was published. And it was told to me by a fellow named Dan Pine, who writes for the J, the Jewish newspaper of Northern California. This is an irreverent joke. You all right? You stand for one.
I have heard irreverent jokes. We have even shared them. This isn't the pulpit. Even, it's okay.
But irreverent because it in the capital sense. You know, it involves the voice of God.
Yes, yes. I understand.
So Yasha hears the voice of God, and he's thrilled, and this miraculous God is talking to him. And what God tells him to do is to sell his house and sell all his belongings. Is this sounding familiar to you, Rabbi?
No, I don't think I've heard it.
All right. So I hadn't heard it either. To sell everything and put all the money in a bag and go to Las Vegas. God tells him this. So how can he defy God? He does exactly what God says, goes to Las Vegas, and the voice of God speaks to him again and says, go to the Venetian casino and go to the first blackjack table you see. And he's got his bag, just as he was instructed, goes to the casino, sits down at the casino, puts the bag down, waiting for the voice of God. And the voice of God says, all your money on the first hand, everything in your bag. And, you know, he's somewhat filled with fear and anxiety about this, but this is the voice of God. So he puts it all on the first hand, and he's dealt a 10 and a 9, which, you know, is a really good hand in blackjack.
Yeah.
21 is, of course, the best hand, so he's ready to stick with 19, and the voice of God says, take a hit.
Right.
And he says, he talks right back to the voice of God. He says, but God, how can I take a hit? All right, so he takes a hit, and miraculously, an ace comes up. And then the voice of God says, take another hit. And Yasha's beside himself. He can't imagine how you're going to do it. Take a hit with 20? This is impossible. I've got a winning hand. Why should I do it? Well, it's the voice of God. Give me another hit, he says to the dealer. The dealer gives him another ace, and he's rejoicing. He's brilliant. He's beyond, as you can imagine, that. He's waiting for the voice of God. And then he hears it. It says, unbe-blankin-leavable.
I like that one. That's great. That's not exceptionally Jewish, but it's good. It could be any denomination, I think.
Well, you find that in a lot of these jokes.
But maybe that's just our common humanity. You have a whole section in your book about schlemiels and schmucks and the distinction. It's a famous distinction in Judaism, although, you know, there's the schlemiel, the schmuck is the one who pours the hot soup over the schlemiel at the table by accident.
No, the schlemazel.
Oh, the schlemazel. Thank you very much. Well, you can clarify all of it. But there's an interesting thing where you talk about Steve Jobs, having interviewed Walter Isaacson, his biographer. Dad, tell us a little bit about that, because it's a really interesting little story, and I think it helps point up something about Jews.
Well, the thing that was fun in writing this book, and there was, as you could probably tell, having read it, a lot of scholarship and work that went into it, but
right.
I was able to weave in a lot of anecdotes and stories in addition to the jokes and the analysis. And it got a little beyond jokes. I mean, it got into not only storytelling and narratives of my own, but also I was writing about shtick and stand-up. I mean, the contribution of Jews to comedy in general, in movies and television and cartoons and so forth, is staggering. It's just unbelievable.
Right.
But we know that. A lot of Gentiles don't necessarily know that. But what the story you're talking about was, I was trying to talk about what a schmuck is. And it's one of those words that has gone through morphing, like shiksa, which was once a terrible pejorative, and now, because of popular culture, is very acceptable. And I even saw a license plate that said, I'm a shiksa.
It's fascinating, because it comes from the word for, like, a creepy crawly, like a crawling insect. Sheketz, yeah.
It's something that you want to get rid of because you don't want
it's horrible.
To
it's like a cockroach, basically. So it's really, really extraordinary that it's become acceptable. That's true.
It's something out of Kafka. You're right.
Right.
But it's now acceptable, and there are words that are like the opposite of that, like the word schwarzo, which once was kind of acceptable, and now is just like almost the N word. It's a terrible pejorative. I think Sheketz has become acceptable largely because of popular culture, because of Sex and the City and shows like that that have used the word with Jewish scriptwriters, no doubt. But this was an attempt to put schmuck back where it belongs. Like Mel Brooks was concerned at one point about the word schmuck being not as much a part of our lexicon as it deserves to be. And it's kind of become more identified with loser, which is more what a schlemiel is. A schmuck was really kind of a villain.
A jerk, a horrible person.
A nasty person. In fact, it's funny to use this word as freely now on your radio show, because I mentioned that Lenny Bruce once said that when he was arrested for obscenity, he said he used the word schmuck, and there was a undercover cop who understood Yiddish. That was maybe the reason for his arrest for obscenity. But I was talking about Steve Jobs, and I knew him somewhat because he lived here in the Bay Area, and I have a pretty popular radio show, and had occasion to meet him a couple of times. And he was always a very amicable, charming guy, but he was noted for his skinflintness, especially when it came to what we would call tzedakah, when it came to, you know, contributing to causes. He just apparently didn't do it. And I had interviewed Walter Isaacson, his biographer, who claimed to have come across all of this information about Steve Jobs, how terrible he was with women. Steve Jobs was allegedly, according to Walter, totally forthright with him, the biographer. But nobody seemed to know, did he ever give any money even secretly or you know, undercover? The same question seems to have come up with Donald Trump. We can't see his taxes. What did he really give to charity? And nobody knew with Jobs. So I talked to some people who knew him pretty well, and even though his wife gave a lot of money in her name, Jobs apparently was not someone who gave much of any money to anybody in any philanthropic or tzedakah way. So I said, my conclusion is Steve Jobs was a schmuck.
You know, it's such an interesting and such a Jewish approach. What was the most surprising thing you discovered in putting together the book about Jewish humor?
Well, there were a lot of surprises. It's hard to say, you know, superlatively, this is the most surprising thing that I encountered. But I think what maybe surprised or maybe even astonished me was just the break that you can see between shtetl humor, because I am somewhat of a Yiddishist, and I was very interested in folkloric humor, and the transformation or mutation or morphing or whatever you want to call it, it goes through when it reaches America and particularly becomes more assimilated and more secular. I didn't want to make this into an elegy, but I could have, I suppose, because I realized to some extent a lot of the Yiddish humor that I grew up with, and they're still Jews dominant in the field of comedy, but their sense of Yiddishkeit and their sense of understanding particularly the roots of humor and the tradition of humor, and as an educator, I kind of harp on this perhaps more than I should. I don't even mean to scold young people or the parents who were not, shall we say, giving them this mama lotion, mother's milk, but a lot of it has been lost, and that was a bit of a shock to the system. Maybe a surprise in the sense of something I wasn't terribly happy about, but had to acknowledge. And so the book became even more of a necessity for me to, as I say, as a scholar, as an educator, to really pass this on, to make a younger generation more aware of so much that's to cherish, that's really embedded in the history as much as their food, their Jewish food, or their Jewish holidays or celebrations. It's the humor that I want to live on.
It's a great way to do it by getting Let There Be Laughter, Michael Krasny's Treasury of Great Jewish Humor and What It All Means, both for the jokes and for the analysis. Michael, thanks so much.
Okay, I thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Here on Too Jewish, our guest will be Richard Michelson, author of Fascinating, The Life of Leonard Nimoy. Our playout this morning comes for the upcoming High Holy Days. It's from Montreal-born music legend Leonard Cohen. His interpretation of the section of the Unetana Tokef, a signature prayer of both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur mornings, Who by Fire. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a good final week of 5776, and a week, we pray, of peace.
And who by fire, who by water, who in the sunshine, who in the nighttime, who by high ordeal, who by common trial, who in your merry, merry month of May, who by very slow decay,
and who shall I say is calling?
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.